SCP-8770, Submechanophobia, I Miss You. Of the various phobias we've covered recently, submechanophobia has to be among the most rational. It's a fear of submerged man-made objects, and granted, that does include stuff that's really pretty harmless, such as underwater statues and buoys, but it also includes shipwrecks. Being underwater in an ocean is already a place humans weren't really ever meant to be, but inside of a dark, decrepit, rusting structure adds on a whole other layer. Of course, this is an SCP we're talking about, so SCP-8770 is absolutely a thing that no human should ever go into, and yet that's exactly what we're going to read about. Let's take a look. The containment procedures for 8770 state that ship traffic is to be diverted from the area containing 8770, and buoys placed around the area are to be checked on a monthly basis to ensure that they haven't shifted. If their placement has shifted, a diving team is to be dispatched, and 8770 is to be monitored for changes in its geometry. Otherwise, the anomaly is to be left abandoned. It is not to be inhabited. SCP-8770 is a vessel in a state of irregular structural flux, located upon the sea floor of the Atlantic Ocean. Its exterior most frequently resembles that of a man-made sunken vessel, roughly 355 meters in length on average. While external changes to the vessel occur at seemingly random intervals, there have been some notable or consistent shifts. These include changes in the materials that make up its outer structures, such as metal into wood, or instances of stone, fabric, or glass. There have been occurrences of new walls, which suggest the creation of additional internal rooms, as well as large junctions of metal beams jutting downwards towards the sea floor, and indistinct railings along the vessel's top portions. Steering apparatuses have appeared resembling those found on ships of inconsistent age, as well as nonsensical directional signs, wires, and engine structures and propellers consistent with that of motorized boats and submarines. There have even been roofs, sidings, windows, and doors resembling those found on residential homes. All of the structures on the vessel are often in states of high decay and water damage, and the undersea area around it is almost a complete ecological dead zone, devoid of all marine life, with the exception of some corals that have grown on the anomaly. During initial analysis, it was discovered that the vessel exerts a minor mimetic influence on its surroundings, increasing feelings of unease and discomfort in those that are within 5 meters of its exterior. All attempts to access the interior of the vessel with unmanned submersibles has resulted in the complete cessation of all technological functions upon entry. Approximately 3 submersibles were lost before the prospect of a manned investigation was proposed and subsequently approved. Rather than sending in some unfortunate D-class, however, they sent in some MTF teams. The first 4 manned expeditions into the vessel were to determine the internal dimensions of its interior. The teams were instructed to remain on the outskirts, staying along the exterior wall as much as possible. And over the course of these explorations, several things were noted. The interior was notably clear of any water damage that would be expected of a structure of this nature, but that was hardly the most anomalous part. Hallways, doors, and windows appeared and disappeared randomly between each expedition, along with the overall interior dimensions, and the vessel's interior does not match the dimensions of its exterior, in spite of exterior shifts. The 5th manned expedition was sent to try to discover the center of the vessel, and the subsequent log comprises the remainder of the article. 3 members of MTF Gamma 6 Deep Feeders, with the codenames of Black Carpet, Ningen, and Matagi Carcass, were deployed to find the center of the anomaly. To determine if its mimetic properties intensify by internal proximity, their heart rates were monitored and recorded. The team approaches the top portion of the vessel, noting that it has the appearance of the upper deck of a commercial fishing ship. There are broken posts and rotted barrels, with two paddle wheels emerging from parts of the hull, their bottom halves seemingly fused into the rusted metal. These antiquated pieces appear out of time and place. The vessel visibly stretches on for roughly 30 meters in all directions, the rest of the anomaly obscured by the cloudy water, leaving only distant silhouettes and shadows. The water is still, devoid of movement and life as the team draws closer. Ningen remarks that there's an opening in the floor of the hull up ahead, which should make for easy entry. The three swim to the gap in the hull, finding a ladder covered in algae and barnacles. They swim inside, seeing that the interior appears like that of a standard submersible. They all turn on their headlights, and Ningen wraps a strip of reflective, waterproof tape around one of the rungs of the ladder to help them keep track of where they've been. Mitagi wonders if that'll work, since the interior of this place seems to shuffle around, but Ningen says that hopefully when it shuffles, there's a rhyme and reason to it, while Black Carpet says that it's better than nothing at all. Mitagi asks if there's something in here they want them to find, but Black Carpet says that they just want to see if there's a center to this thing, a source. Although there's no life anywhere around this thing, and anything mobile seems to avoid it like the plague. Mitagi remarks that that's good for them then, but it sure sounds like the exact opposite. Ningen pulls out a heavy-duty compass, and the other two follow him as he swims down the corridor. The visibility is considerably low, only allowing sight roughly a meter ahead. After approximately 10 seconds, they find a hatch at the end of the hall. Ningen moves to open it, but it turns before he touches it. There's a loud hissing sound as he gasps through his respirator, and his heart rate increases. The hatch wheel turns completely before slowly opening inwards without being touched, and the team notes that they feel a current. They inform Command, who just tells them to keep going but to be on alert. They proceed through into a living room, decorated with several pieces of furniture, all facing an inactive television. The floor is carpeted, and there's a bookshelf against the far wall, which Black Carpet approaches. Mitagi notes that nothing here is rotten or covered in coral, compared to the exterior, which looks like it's been underwater for decades. Ningen brushes his hand along the carpet, which stirs up no debris, before moving over to wrap some tape around a lamp. His and Mitagi's heart rate is stable, but Black Carpet's suddenly rises. She tells them to come look at this so she knows that her eyes aren't playing tricks on her. She's holding one of the books from the bookshelf, which is undamaged by the water. Random assortments of words and letters fill the pages without rhyme or reason, with some pages entirely blank. Ningen says that she's seen it right. It's all gibberish. Mitagi heads into the adjoining kitchen, finding a dining table and four chairs. This room is also untouched by rot, rust, or any other signs of water damage. On the table are placemats, plates, and silverware laid out and organized. The rest of the kitchen features a set of cupboards above a counter with a sink, as well as a fridge and an oven. The wires from the fridge are spread out all over the floor, but none of them seem to be live. Ningen remarks that it looks like everybody just up and left during dinner, but Black Carpet asks if there's any signs here of this place ever being inhabited. Mitagi opens a couple of the cupboards and the fridge, finding them all to be empty, so Ningen informs Command of what they've found. Command asks if there's any other paths to go, while Black Carpet fiddles with the knobs on the oven, seeing one of the back burners start to glow red as she does so. She swiftly turns it off, and the three head down another hallway into a child's bedroom. The interior is also pristine in spite of the water, with a small bed, a nightstand, and a bureau all untouched and undamaged. The walls appear to be pale, but the exact color is difficult to discern because of the water. Mitagi searches the bureau and finds it filled with children's clothes that look to be unworn. She swiftly closes the drawer to keep them from floating upwards, while Ningen swims up to the ceiling to grab a suspended teddy bear. He turns it in his hands and sees the front of it covered in dark splotches of mold and rot, as well as bits of coral, causing him to swear and drop it. The three team members' heart rates all rise as he hisses through his respirator in surprise. Black Carpet picks up and examines it, while Matagi checks the ceiling where Ningen found it, noting that it seems to still be solid and devoid of damage. They're unsure as to why the bear is the only thing they've found with water damage, but they decide to leave it here for now. The bear floats back up to the ceiling, its rotted face now staring at the team as they swim back out. In the hallway, they now see a new door that's ajar, reporting the first structural shift to command. They enter through the door after Ningen marks the handle with tape, and proceed for the next hour and a half. During this time, they pass 44 bedrooms, 18 kitchens, 26 bathrooms, and 14 living rooms. The furniture within the rooms ranges wildly in time period with little consistency. Periodically, they leave an indication of their path via fluorescent tape. As they progress through hallway after hallway, they note that water damage and rust has become noticeable in places, with holes in some walls and visible pipes underneath. There's also discordant rods of metal, scattered instances of rotted wood, or furniture against otherwise pristine pieces. The team stops for a brief break within the 15th living room, having to have opened a ship hatch to enter it. There's a window on the far wall of the room, and their compass shows it to be an impossibility in relation to the rest of the vessel. Beyond it is an expanse of water, with their light illuminating a massive tangle of wires and pipes in the distance. There are unclear silhouettes past the tangle that appear to be moving, causing Black Carpet's heart rate to rise. Matagi is examining the walls of the connecting halls, glancing around at the rooms, and she notes that it almost feels deliberate. It's been on her mind since the first room that this all feels like it's all been set up for something, or someone. Black Carpet counters that maybe it was supposed to be, but she doesn't think it is anymore. She turns back to the window, which is now gone, comparing it to when a landlord paints the walls to hide the wood rot. She traces her hand where the window was, causing flecks of rust to float off the wall. Ningen asks if they're diving past those cover-ups then, and Matagi wonders if they keep going, maybe they'll find what this thing truly is then. Command notes that they only have enough air for 5 more hours, but the team agrees to keep going deeper in. They continue for another 30 minutes, until Matagi notices that one of the rotted boards along the floor is shifting. She reaches downward and lifts it, finding a fish wrapped in wire and cables. It looks as if it's impaled on some piping, but there's no sharp point or end to the pipe, as if it had wound itself through the fish. The fish is also still alive, but electrical wiring weaves through its flesh and scales, holding it tight. Its fins have melted into the rotted wood. The text here slightly diverges from a standard log, as the page subtly darkens in brightness, and some of the text takes on a less formal tone. Also, certain parts are written in blue instead of black. The text states that the fish lives here and loves it here. Matagi's heart rate increases significantly upon seeing it, and she asks Command to confirm what she's seen, which they do. Ningen says that they should keep moving, so Matagi returns the floorboard to where it was. Command, in blue text, says that a shipwreck is a type of corpse, but the others don't reply to this, and they continue. The halls have widened at this point, so the team is able to swim side by side. Blue text states that the wallpaper is beautiful, and there are flowers painted on them, little yellow ones. The team enters a massive room, with blue text stating that there are pillars stretching up to the ceiling, and the floor is polished stone. It is like an entryway to something grand, with dancing patterns across the walls in bright and lively colors. Ningen comments on a sound, and Mitagi says that she thinks it's the pipes, before turning on a stronger light. Their heart rate increases as they start moving through the room and swimming upwards. There is a loud humming in the air, vibrating the water, with the blue text stating that the walls are singing. Black Carpet tells the others to watch the wires, as they can't tell if they're live or not, and this whole place has been inconsistent with what does and doesn't have juice in it. Mitagi notes that it's a bit of a tangled mess in here, while the blue text states that the room is expansive and open. The team squeezes past a trio of pipes, brushing rust and coral into the water. Ningen remarks that it's starting to look more like a ship here, as if a submarine's engine room exploded, and Mitagi wonders if it actually is an engine room, due to how much noise there is. The team maneuvers past more tangles of wires and pipes, and Ningen catches a glimpse of two fish swimming and playing amongst the halls, even though this is supposed to be a dead zone. A circular structure laid into the ceiling above rotates within a rusted steel frame. Beyond it, a large fan with metal blades spins, and between this noise and the others, the team's speech is drowned out. Mitagi is seen putting a hand against the side of her head, but they eventually locate a hatch within the room, pulling it open. They enter into a hallway, followed by a 16th living room, and the blue text states that it's better here. It's quiet, free of the rot and the pain, and it hurts less here. It's sorry. They proceed to travel down the halls for roughly 10 minutes, finding more bedrooms and living spaces, all heavily damaged and with fallen pieces of furniture strewn about. Mitagi asks what the status on their tanks is, and Ningen checks to see that they're at 4 hours left. Since they've been in here for over 2 hours, they agree that it's probably wise to turn back now. Ningen informs command, and the blue text responds, asking them if they know how it feels to fall apart and to rot. It states that it hurts, it aches, and it can feel the seawater eating it more and more as seconds, minutes, days, years, decades pass by. It corrodes, it burns, and the cold waters do not save it. Obviously, the actual command said something different, as Mitagi just replies that they'll start to head out. The team turns to swim back the way they came, reaching the end of the hall, but the hatch they came through is now gone. All of their heart rates raise significantly, and Ningen reaches out to touch the wall, which looks as though it hasn't been touched in decades. The team spends roughly 10 minutes attempting to use an underwater saw to cut through the wall, but they're unsuccessful, as the saw is unable to pierce deep enough into the metal. Mitagi says that there were other halls they didn't take, so maybe something loops back around. Ningen's hands are now shaking, and Black Carpet informs command of the situation. The blue text states that it's going to be okay, while command wishes them luck and tells them to be careful. Black Carpet tells the others to take steady breaths, as they can't go burning through their oxygen. They have around 4 hours still, so they should keep trying some of the other halls. The blue text bids them to come inside. Mitagi shakes her head and follows, while Ningen keeps his hand braced on the wall for a few more moments before exhaling and also following. With the angle of the floor, it looks as if the team is descending deeper. They spend the next 30 minutes searching for an exit, while the blue text states that they will find that it is beautiful and that the doors are long sealed shut. They spend another 2 hours searching for an exit, but are still unsuccessful. Ningen says that this isn't working, and he can barely see, while the others tell him that they can't just give up. The blue text states that there are so many rooms for them to stay. Ningen continues to angrily state that they're running out of oxygen and they're deeper than before, so they're not going to make it. Matagi begs him not to say that, while Black Carpet braces her hand against a rotted wall before jerking it away swiftly. The water is filled with dirt and debris and algae, and the blue text tells them not to look for them, as it's okay. Ningen and Matagi both exclaim, wondering where Black Carpet went, before Ningen swears and starts swimming again, with Matagi following. Ningen says that they're going to get the hell out of here, and they can either spend it trying to find Black Carpet while all of them drown, or maybe only one of them drowns. Black Carpet is smart, so maybe she can find a different way. Command tells the two to remain calm, and they ask if they have any read on Black Carpet. Command replies that her heart's still beating, but they've lost all visual. Ningen just continues, and the blue text tells them not to look behind the walls. It loves them, and these walls love them. Ningen and Matagi swim for another 10 minutes before entering a living room, with overturned furniture, water damage, and a bent lamp. Ningen scans the room before approaching a window, trying to open it and break it to no avail. He hangs his head as Matagi scans down some more hallways, noticing what looks to be one of their tape markers down one of them. The two swiftly swim towards it, finding a strip of reflective tape attached to a pipe next to a door. Ningen excitedly heads through the door, while Matagi glances back hesitantly before following. Further through the next series of rooms, they find another marker, and Command asks how they're doing. Matagi informs them that they've found their markers, and Command tells them to keep going, as the recovery vessel is waiting for them up top. The two quickly move through more rooms over the next 15 minutes, finding more markers, until they enter a living room and see a bent lamp. Matagi and Ningen's heart rate is raised, although Black Carpet's is still stable. The blue text tells them to stop trying to look, but the two continue moving until passing the bent lamp a fourth time, causing Matagi to stop and point out that they've been going in circles. Ningen doesn't believe it, as they would have noticed the same halls, but Matagi decides to test it by placing a lit flashlight on one of the couches. The two continue following the tape markers, now with a little over 2 hours of air left, but Ningen's breathing rate is faster paced now. They end up back in the living room with the bent lamp, and there is a lit flashlight on the couch. The blue text tells them to just come inside and to bring their warmth, as the walls miss the warmth. The walls are writhing, the wood creaks and splinters, but Ningen and Matagi see a new hallway that wasn't there before. Without a word, the two swim down it, following another set of markers into what looks like the engine room from earlier. Matagi begins to say that maybe this means something, but they turn a corner into a room with no exits and hundreds of strips of fluorescent tape tied around pipes hanging from the ceiling. Ningen begins to panic, causing heavy bursts of bubbles to emit from his respirator, while Matagi stays still, looking up at the strips of tape. She asks if it's mocking them, and Ningen exclaims that they don't even know if there is an it, as they could just be losing it, lost in some hellscape. He swims backwards, and his back and arm touch the walls, causing him to begin to scream. Matagi whips around and tries to grab him, but his thrashing causes dirt and rust and algae to cloud the water. Matagi calls out to Command on the verge of tears, with Ningen heard sobbing, but Command doesn't respond. The blue text states that it is without a purpose if it is without them. It needs them, and needs them to come to it. It tells them to go to the shoreline and watch the waves, slip off your shoes and step onto the sand, getting into the water, dive deep below and find it, and come inside where it's safe. The doors will be open for you. It will be open for you so that you may come inside. You can save it from the rot and the pain. You can bring your warmth into these halls. It's made for you because it loves you. It misses you. Matagi is alone, her breathing labored against the respirator. Her flipper had touched the floor and she has become embraced. There is another fish fused against the wall, its tail and head jerking. It is safe, happy. It turns its head to look at her as she struggles, and it states that it's home. Matagi begins to weep, with the blue text stating that she weeps because the joy is within reach. Her heart rate has raised significantly, but Ningen and Black Carpets is stable. Command asks if any of the team copy, and the blue text states that it promises they're okay. It has them. All three team members' heart rates are now stable, and the blue text states that it won't let go. Everything is going to be okay. We're then given some non-blue text that states that Gamma 6 never left. They couldn't have. So here they lay, twitching and writhing against the frame. This place holds and holds, and it does not let go. It is lonely. How could it not be? Wires wind into flesh, pull it taut against sea-eaten metal and rotted wood. A desperate, fatal embrace. The wood melts into their wetsuits, fusing them to these walls. Command tries to sputter out cries through broken communications, and it falls upon ears that can no longer answer. It is hungrily devoured by the water that surrounds in all its crushing power, so far and deep below. They lay with mouths gaping, with fingers twitching, like a fish soon to die. But no, they will not die, not yet. It will not let them. It wants their warmth, the warmth of the living inside it once again. If that warmth comes through blood in the water, then let it be so. A house is not a home without people within. A ship is without purpose if there is no one to steer. A shipwreck is a type of corpse. The wires are in their organs now too. It infests everything that it can, everything that it can hold. Red wires through arteries like a mockery of blood. Blue wires through gray matter, holding, holding, holding. Glass of face masks crack. Respirators sputter out bursts of failing air when their throats fail to produce a sound. The tanks will last them 2 hours more. The hull, the wall, the house creaks. Its foundation is settling. The wires are in their eyes. Their skulls have melted to the metal. They are finally at peace. The last bit of text states that SCP-8770 is not to be inhabited, but some words are instead crossed out to state that SCP-8770 is inhabited. Lastly, we're given the last recovered image of Gamma 6, showing a nondescript section of the vessel and three spots noted as having a stable heart rate. Not to be callous or anything, but this is exactly why the Foundation usually sends in D-Class first. I think if someone had said the basic premise of this article is that it's about a haunted shipwreck that eats people, you'd assume that it's a bargain bin horror movie, but the writing here is certainly unnerving. The anomaly isn't really malicious or evil, even though it seems to be aware that what it's doing is wrong. It's just incredibly lonely and wants the warmth of life inside of it once again, since everything in the entire region avoids it like a plague. With the current containment procedures in place, it's unlikely that it'll ever get any warmth ever again, but who's to say that its mimetic effects won't grow stronger, maybe even drawing people down into the ocean to come inside of it? I know it's not the Foundation's style, but this certainly seems like something they should just torpedo and be done with, if only to put the team out of their misery.